There has never been a time in the business world where you can raise millions of dollars in minutes from a project that has no actual proof of concept or reputation from the team. And in some cases, we don't even know who these people are.
If you delay gratification, you know, and build to provide real value, that reward down the road will far outweigh the immediate payout you may get right now, following the crowd and following what works.
We need to stop treating our holders just as that initial cash source and start talking to them like they're a VC that owns equity in the company's success.
I think we need to be taken seriously as an industry, and we may as well start, you know, acting the way we want to be seen. So let's prioritize and reward innovation. Welcome back to the third episode of Not a JPEG, a podcast about the future of NFTs and Web3.
Where each week we explore everyday sectors of modern society and how NFTs will revolutionize how we start, scale, and sell businesses. Before we get into today's episode, if you're listening for the first time, welcome. We're so excited for you to be here. If you could hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, wherever you're getting this podcast, please follow along. We got lots of great content coming out in the up and coming weeks. If you are on any social media platform, please go check us out at Not a JPEG Podcast. Give us a follow there, and hopefully we can stay in touch as we continue through building more and more episodes.
Totally. And you always got to start strong with the shill. Always got to start strong with the shill. Last episode was the thesis, right, of our entire show, which, again, if you haven't listened, you should definitely go back, start there.
Oh, yeah, go back now. That's some gold there.
Well, I think it just lays the foundation and the context for, you know, everything we're doing. And in a way, it does prepare us for a lot of what we're going to discuss today. So today's episode builds on that thesis, with the focus of why launching an NFT project from scratch should be approached as launching a business. And, you know, this goes for any kind of NFT launch, whether it's, you know, digital service, CPG, you know, performance art piece, what have you, or, you know, even a free mint or art for the sake of art, right? But our main focus today will be largely for those starting an NFT project from scratch, as opposed to, you know, a brand launching an NFT to add to their offering and roster of products and services. You know, we'll do a deep dive on that in future episodes. And, you know, there are differences between the two approaches, but some of the fundamentals that we'll discuss today can definitely be applied, I think, equally across both. So,
oh, yeah, for sure. So now here's the thing. As you should know from episode two, we are super bullish about the future of this technology and are very keen on challenging the existing norms and the way of doing things to make them better, more equitable, and just push positive innovation that does good for humanity, right? We love that NFTs and Web3 took an approach to launching businesses or projects that has been very different than anything that we've seen before.
Yeah, it is quite different.
Yeah, but so let's unpack that a little bit. In the traditional world of launching a business, you launch a startup with either your own savings, you know, funds that you beg from your friends or family. You'll take out a loan, or you'll participate in some sort of fundraise, either like a Kickstarter or a traditional seed round with venture capitalists. You may hire a team of trusted people that will bring a diverse experience. Your product or your service will have been fully prototyped or mostly there before you launch, and you will have some sort of previous expertise, but most importantly, the founder here is front and center. This takes months, if not years, to go through.
Absolutely. And we've almost countered and done the exact opposite in Web3, again, for better or for worse, but we've gone into projects, you know, with little to no savings, you know, hired a bunch of hungry degens, you know, with the promise of equity and future payout from the mint, you know, the raising of the capital. And, you know, we've promised a product, oftentimes on the premise of 8 to 10 JPEGs, which, you know, are supposed to tease the full collection. And, you know, come mint day, you're making millions in mere seconds or minutes or however long it takes you to mint out. And, you know, all of that is done without much of a reputation or in many cases, pseudonymously without, you know, affecting or attaching any real world identity to that. And it's pretty crazy when you think about it, right? So, you know, there's a lot of things to compare and contrast here. And it really is no surprise that people outside of the space view NFTs as a bit of a dirty word or even, you know, a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, no kidding. Some projects are literal Ponzi schemes.
Totally. And you know, there's definitely that. And can't write that off, can't discredit it.
Yeah, especially right now.
But we're not really focusing on those, are we?
No, not today. No.
So it's definitely a leap from the world we know, in a way. And so I think we should kind of dive in and talk about that.
Yeah, like we said earlier, we're very open to doing things differently. You know, I can't stress that enough, but the last year has shown many flaws in the current way of doing things. A lot of creators with good or not so good intentions have come to the space for the reason that this new technology builds, you know, their own opportunity. However, the accessibility of this new approach has had an Achilles heel or two that people have taken advantage of, specifically scammers looking to cheat people who are just, you know, trying to make it. Not only that, but some of the biggest issues with NFTs currently is this obsession with making a quick buck or maintaining the floor price from holders and from founders. It's a really toxic habit and prohibits creativity, since most creators are going to come to make a quick buck. Holders are coming to make a quick buck in an attempt, and they'll end up repeating their purchasing or creative works like that has worked before. So it's something we're seeing a lot of. And, you know, based on a consensus on Twitter, like the community generally agrees with this.
I think for the most part. And, you know, the current approach is not perfect by any means.
Oh, no.
You know, it does need a lot of work. And I mean, we don't have, you know, a magic wand to wave to fix all the problems, nor do we really have a solution, or at least not a one size fits all solution. Right. But we do know that we think the industry would definitely be in a better place if the majority of people launching NFT projects treated it the same way you do launching a business. So basically, for the rest of this episode, we really want to dive into the real world way of funding and growing a business and contrast that, you know, with the current state of Web3 and the way we launch projects in Web3. And I think the hope is that by the time this episode is done, you know, there are a ton of useful little nuggets that can be utilized by future builders in the space. And I mean, we're not offering an MBA here, right?
Just nuggets.
Maybe
some sauce.
Maybe some. Love it. Maybe a little bit of sauce. Yeah, hopefully. And I think walking away from this, we hope that, you know, the information we talk about over the course of this episode will give entrepreneurs the right mindset and some of the starting points, you know, that'll give them the greatest chance of success when launching their own project and navigating the bear market that will, you know, not only serve them and their team, but the people choosing to invest in their projects. So let's dive right in.
Well said, Michael. Well said. Let's get into it. The first area I'd like to talk about today is sources of funding, money. Okay. So when you open a business IRL, you're typically funding a project in a variety of different ways, and you're funding constantly in a variety of different ways. You know, you're not just funding it once and that's it. You're going back and growing as a business grows. You need more investment, you need more capital, and you're constantly going back and raising more money. So some of the ways that I'm aware of seeing how this is done is which I've done, you use your own savings and you bootstrap with your sales the entire way. Another one is borrowing from friends or family, either at zero interest or a small rate. You could take a loan and refinance your home with an interest rate. You could launch a Kickstarter or GoFundMe. Yep. To get average citizens to back you with a return or product of service.
And I would say that Kickstarters and GoFundMe, while you're talking about that, are probably the closest in, you know, the Web2 world for what we are doing in Web3. That's probably the closest comparison, right, in a way.
Oh, absolutely. But I'd even say it's a little bit to my next point. You know, in the IRL, if your project is showing promise and you feel confident enough, you might go and pursue a pre-seed round or a seed round with venture capitalists with a return of equity or an interest on a loan. And that also is kind of like Web3 a little bit. You got a little bit of the Kickstarter model of, you know, average citizen supporting you with the asset aspect of ownership, right?
Oh, 100%.
100%. And we're going to touch more on this later. So all of these sources of funding, though, in real life, all have substantial risk that are risks to your savings, your reputation, your credit score, and your relationships. Mm-hmm. To launch a startup business in real life, you really need to fathom the fiscal responsibility of what you are doing and what you owe to your lenders. You can't just take this money and be gone. You know, there's a real responsibility with real consequences.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Web3, the risk to your savings, your credit score, your reputation, and your relationships, it can be non-existent. You know, with some exceptions, of course, I'm not going to blanket statement this. You don't, though, need money to launch a project. Although cash does help with the marketing and, you know, building out a team, you can launch a project on OpenSea with next to nothing other than your own equity and time. There's no physical product to manufacture. There's no physical location to offer your service. You know, your overhead can be very close to zero, which is, you know, a huge asset with online businesses that we've been seeing now, but even more so with NFTs. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, if you need a team, which most projects do have a team, the ethic has been to hire people with the promise of being paid after mint. You know, they're not necessarily paying them up front. There's this trust that, oh yeah, we'll write into the smart contract, it'll be fine. And although in traditional models, you might give up equity for your partners, there's not the same upfront payment that you get with you know, giving up equity. You know, that payout may come in a very, very long time versus with an NFT, the payout can be right after mint.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that when Katarina says equity, we mean give equity in the NFT, you know, and obviously for those in Web3, you know all about this. This is clearly how it works. But, you know, for those who don't, a little peek behind the curtain. When we say equity in this case, we don't mean equity in the business or any sort of long-term equity the way we would when you're thinking about, you know, a partner in a company.
Yeah, shares in a company, right?
Shares in a company. Absolutely. It's mainly equity for that project and that project alone, right? So the mentality is we're all working together to build this thing, and we part ways after it. And you know, there is obviously this the royalty contract, and you know, sometimes people are baked in or weave themselves into that, and they have a little bit more stake in the game long term. But for the most part, it's like we work together on this one project, and that's about it. That's about as much accountability as exists. And so there is no long-term responsibility or accountability from the whole team for the most part, and in many cases. So that is kind of tricky when it comes to following through past the mint. And oftentimes, I think that's one of the reasons that we see a lot of projects failing, right?
Yeah, well, not like failing in terms of being able to provide value to the asset that the holders held, because the team just dissolves. Like, you know, a great example is developers hop from project to project, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they stick around for the mint and maybe post-mint a bit. But, you know, I've heard many times where developers just like they're done with that project and they move on.
It is a pretty sweet gig, you know, as obviously a talented dev. You usually have like a you know, code you've written that you can reuse for other projects, and you know, you jump in, you get 20-30% of the equity of the mint, and you know, it mints out or what have you. You walk away with your amount and you move on to the next one, and you know, unless you've actually formed a long term team, that's typically how it's, you know, how it's kind of gone.
Yeah, but developers also make an insane amount of money off of these projects.
Yeah.
Right,
or did at least in the bull market.
Yeah, the bull market they did, and it's, you know, they deserve it. Don't get me wrong; I'm not saying they don't, but like, they were just working as part of a team in a regular business, they might not make that much money that quickly.
Yeah. And that's largely what's driven the incentive of, you know, teams being formed. Superstar team gets formed for a project, and you know, we've achieved our goal. We've minted out, hooray! On to the next, right?
But despite all of this, the most important contrast between launching a project IRL and one in Web3 is the fact that you have the potential to raise an unprecedented amount of capital all within mere minutes.
Yes. And this is what's driven that gold rush, right, that we've seen, and all the headlines with all the massive amounts of money to be made in NFTs.
And the hate from people who don't understand it.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, like, that's a big one.
There has never been a time in the business world where you can raise millions of dollars in minutes from a project that has no actual proof of concept or reputation from the team. And in some cases, we don't even know who these people are.
Yep.
Not to say that it's not possible in traditional funding. Like, there were Kickstarters that raised millions above their initial ask. And, you know, we do get unicorn investment rounds too. But even on Kickstarter, or when you do a traditional seed round, you need to demonstrate a sound business plan, a strong team, a financial data to show that you've got what it takes to go through long term. Like, the roadmaps that we saw in 2021 would be laughable investments to any traditional investor. And even in a Kickstarter, founders would have had a very hard time convincing the gatekeepers over at Kickstarter, because they ask for simple information like, you know, verify your identity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing to note is that obviously that mania, the speculative gold rush, was driven largely by the desire to make money. So no one really cared about that aspect of it. And many people were just buying in assets that have obviously a lot of resale value, hoping that they'd ape into a project that, you know, they could sell for a lot more down the road.
I think that's why we're mainly stuck right now too. It's in continuing this cycle, because nobody really wants to step out and try something different.
No.
So this is where we come in with a little bit of a solution here. If the goal in the end of the day is for the masses to adopt NFTs, we really need to normalize, celebrate, and get creative with mints that are not in the millions of dollars here. Mm-hmm. Here are some things that NFT founders, you know, maybe should consider. Okay. So traditional businesses utilize a variety of different funding sources, as I mentioned earlier, that are based on typically substantial goals, like, i.e., we need to raise 100,000 so we can do this production run. Mm-hmm. Or they're based on how much capacity the founder has and the team has based on previous experience, or maybe they have assets they can use as collateral. Or it's based on the actual calculated value of the business.
Totally.
Right? We believe that mints should be goals-based. They should be calculated on real goals for growing sustainable projects with clear and transparent financials provided to the community as time goes on. Having, you know, multiple mints for different growth steps in the business mimics what happens in real life. And it not only reduces the greed and the lack of motivation due to having suddenly this massive payout, but it builds trust within the community and the masses in general that the project's funds are actually being used to grow the business based on tangible milestones. You know, founders who are paying themselves millions at the onset are just, you know, it could be potentially really dangerous.
Yeah, like, I think for me, you know, everyone is in the space to make money, and there's nothing wrong with a big payday, but because of, you know, this backwards sentiment or the way that we do things backwards, whereas, you know, in a traditional business, you don't start off with, you know, the financial incentive. You're working up towards that. Here it's the opposite. You know, you start with that big financial incentive right off the bat. What is there really to work towards to? And, you know, it's true. Like, I hate to say it, but that's a large part of it. And so for us, maybe, you know, especially given the fact that the blockchain is obviously a public ledger, your moves, especially financial moves, are transparent. You know, maybe not taking, you know, pocketing $1.5 million off of a mint right off the bat, and, you know, investing that back into the project, or you know, showing the community that your intentions are to put that back into the project or leave it in a treasury might, you know, give them, you know, a little bit more faith and trust in you as sort of a someone who intends to bring the project, you know, into the sort of long-term goal or vision that you've actually intended for it to.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, sticking point number two, identity and the relationship of the founder and the team.
That's a big one.
Yeah. So when you start a business in real life, you don't necessarily need to be the face of the company per se, but you will need to be known if you expect anyone to finance you, work for you, or, you know, just buy products and services from you.
Yeah, it's literally why resumes exist, right? It's why we place such an emphasis on, you know, maintaining all the things we have done as we grow and progress in our career, right? Because it's a visual representation of what you are capable of and what you've done to date, simply put.
And so knowing a founder's background provides a lot of confidence as to whether or not they are prepared to actually do the work necessary to have that business succeed. in addition, knowing a founder's current countenance and their personality allows financiers, teams, and clients to relate on a deeper level to that product and service, which builds trust and hope for success.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of investors often say that the most important thing they look for when they invest in a company is first and foremost the founder. And that's especially true when there are no financials or no numbers. Really, all you are doing is investing in that person because you have such conviction and belief that they will execute on the vision that they've set ahead in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really an important sticking point. So moving into Web3, it's really easy to be and, you know, widely acceptable for some reason that to be a founder, you can also remain anonymous. Some would argue it's for safety reasons, and there have been cases in the past where angry holders have done some pretty shady things to doxed founders. And the pseudonymity of Web3 is really important. We're not trying to say get rid of it. I think it needs to actually be maintained and protected as we move forward into the future. But the reality is that we need to accept there are dangers to a community and to holders if founders remain anonymous, especially if you're trying to run a business, right? So in a digital space that you can remain anonymous, founders are really not at risk of losing much, you know, their network or their reputation. Thus, they can easily take advantage of this situation and scam innocent people who believe that their digital entity is actually going to follow through as promised.
I would add a note about the reputation bit that, you know, it does work a little bit differently than the real world. Obviously, we do have a digital reputation to maintain, especially those who have created a bit of a persona. But, you know, the risk is, all right, what do? You delete your Twitter account, you start from scratch and you build your following, right? You can't really do that in the real world unless, you know, you go through some sort of identity change or you're in the witness protection program.
Yeah, and they don't really just give those out.
No, they definitely don't. No.
So we have no solid way to hold scammers accountable. We hope that they're going to be good people, but they might not be, and they didn't need to prove it. So, like, why do we widely accept this? Like, why is there such blind trust when there's so much money on the line? I don't get it.
It's a great question. And it's, you know, it's one that I think was largely sort of due to the mania and the speculative gold rush. You know, we kind of lost track of our senses while jumping face first into trying to make some money. And I know that's, you know, it's a horrible way to look at it, but, you know, what you are describing is obviously a rug pull. It's a word that, you know, many of you obviously know. If you're not a Web3 native, though, just a little behind the scenes or peek behind the curtain, it's a term that's derived from literally having the rug pulled from underneath your feet, basically describing a scam. You know, people hyping up a project through social media, obviously price goes up, scammer makes away with the funds. And you are left holding an utterly worthless token. So these rug pulls in just 2021 alone have accounted for at least 2.8 billion in stolen crypto. That is 2.8 billion in stolen crypto. Holy shit.
Yikes. That's not a good look, guys.
Nope.
Let's give a couple examples to really make it clear, because I think that number is an understatement or an underestimate, because, you know, traditional rugs where they actually take with the money, you know, that's great and all, but there are many half rugs or things where people don't follow through with what they promise, and I think that is not counted in that number. So we got a lot of work to do here if we're going to build a better reputation. So let's talk about a couple different rugs that really stood out. So Frosties, it was the first rug of 2022 to 20-year-old creators. And the reason I bring it up is it's actually one of the first rugs to actually be on trial. So the law is getting involved, which is, you know, a step forward.
Step in the right direction.
Step in the right direction. These two creators are being charged with committing wire fraud and conspiracy to commit money laundering. And they took $1.1 million of crypto from their holders, which is insane. They may be facing 20 years in prison.
It's not
if they're
petty
found
theft.
Guilty.
It's not petty theft
no,
at all.
It's definitely not. Another project, Iconix, on the Solana network. There was $150,000 worth of Solana tokens stolen. Really sick 3D art was promised. People aped in, and instead, the holders were promised, and, you know, what they were promised wasn't what happened. They were sent random emojis from the founder's phone. The founder was 17 years old, guys.
Yeah,
17.
And I think it's important to note in those two cases that Katerina just described, you know, there is such a disconnect still in our minds between the physical and the digital. And theft in the physical world looks very different than theft in the digital world. And I think that plays a huge part in, you know, these people actually following through with these scams and not realizing the actual real world implications of the crimes they are committing, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A final one we'd like to touch on. It's not really a rug, the project itself, but you'll understand in a second. So Azuki, you know, very popular project, a very high floor price. Even to this day, people are still buying it. Zagabond, the founder, came out this year and admitted to abandoning, rugging, his past three projects, CryptoFunks, CryptoZunks, and Tendies. Him coming out and saying that actually dropped the price of his project by 50%. So it's not quite a rug because he didn't, you know, take the money. He was being transparent. But the fact of the matter is that he wasn't being transparent beforehand. And I don't think that would have flown. And his project wouldn't have done as well if he actually was honest, you know, and there was a track record present.
And that's a very good point that, you know, not all rugs are necessarily outright scams. There's a lot of middle ground. You know, everyone does use that word quite liberally. You know, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. And there are definitely instances where it is 100% true, but it's kind of become a term to even talk about people who have kind of failed to deliver, even though they may have tried their damn hardest on certain promises. But I think because NFTs are the closest thing we've seen to like a free capitalistic wild, wild west, at least that we have seen in our lifetimes, you know, these cases of the rugs can exist in this environment. And there's really not much we were able to do about it, at least last year. You know, obviously we would all say DYOR, do your own research. But with the anonymity that exists and the lack of full project transparency, you know, you may never get the full picture. So some take-home points from that we can adopt in Web3. So if the goal is mass adoption as a community, we really need to stop giving scammers so much power, right? And so much business, right? And we need to basically encourage the value of not only continuing to do your own research like we have, but really encouraging and enforcing sort of transparency within founders, right? And essentially, you know, buying projects that feel like they come from a good place and support sort of founders and the team that we wish to support. And this leads us to sort of the next question. And obviously we support fully the anonymous aspect of Web3. That idea of being able to create an identity for yourself or recreate who you are is definitely important. But as a founder and as someone who wants to be kind of the figurehead of a project, I think being doxxed is the way to go. There is really no real risk to doxxed founders. You know, if you're being real, if you're being upfront, if you're being honest, if you're operating with integrity and managing FUD, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt as best as you can, right? You know, holders will always have FUD. They'll always be FUDding. But if you can remove that fear and that uncertainty by removing that anonymity and being who you are and revealing kind of your true identity and who you are as a human, the doubts will also disappear, right? So this leads us into the next point that you should treat your holders like venture capitalists, right?
Yeah. No, really good point there, Michael, about the FUD. Really like that one. So let's talk about real businesses. You know, when somebody gives money to a founder for their business, they're going to want some sort of personal or legal assurance or some sort of collateral that the risk they're taking is, you know, going to be taken care of. Any traditional venture capitalist expects meetings, in-person updates, financial data with each quarter. And if they're on the board, they're going to want to help guide those decisions and utilize their network to ensure they get the best return on their investment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, flip side, when you run a Kickstarter, thanks to social media and Web2, people who buy into projects follow up on that business that they've invested in to actually see if they're manufacturing that backed product. I know you have a lot of experience with that.
Yeah, so I've definitely backed my fair share of Kickstarters back in the day. And the ones that have always done the best have been the ones that have maintained constant communication and transparency, you know, about any delays or issues or problems with the people buying in. And that has always resulted in the most positive Kickstarter experience. So
Yeah, no, they are an audience in the end of the day, but they also are kind of a watchdog there. And if you can, you know, they can go and ruin your reputation if you don't deliver.
And in reality, I mean, anyone with an internet connection can, right? It's why we review businesses. It's why we review, you know, our Uber drivers. It's a part of our society. But in Web3, you know, not only are your holders, your investors, your backers, fans, your lenders, on top of all of that, they are also a creator, right? They're an active part of this thing you are growing and building. And we've never built companies in collaboration with our community ever, really. You know, the inner workings of a corporation were always reserved for the team, the staff, the board of directors. In Web2, we built audiences for our products and services, not communities. And in Web3, that's what we're doing, right? And so it's an incredibly huge and exciting opportunity for companies and brands to build alongside their fans and have their fans be an active part of that, right? You know, the end user finally has a stake in the game, right?
Yeah, it's unlike anything we've ever been able to do before. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and all those loopholes, accreditation, levels of wealth, you know, that were needed in Web2 are kind of mostly gone in Web3. It's really leveled the playing field and done something completely different. And, you know, that is something that we cannot underestimate, right? The power of a community can make or break a project, because at the end of the day, you know, the holders are also trying to protect their bottom line, mm-hmm. right? They've got skin in the game, right? And that's what makes launching a biz in Web3 quite different from launching a business in Web2 or even Web 1, right? And that is the pitchfork mentality, right? And Katarina kind of touched on that a little bit at the beginning, you know, in the previous section around the anonymity around an owner. It's a little bit more risky to build a biz in Web 3 because of that community power, because they will hold you accountable to the things you are doing. And I think, you know, that definitely plays a role in why people choose to be anonymous. The average person really has no staying power, experience, or foresight like an accredited investor, you know, so blind faith like a friend or family member would have, you know, or collateral that a bank would have, you know, any move right or wrong by a founder can lead to FUD, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the average investor in NFTs, you know, they don't have, as you said, the experience to be comfortable with things going a little bit wrong. So they immediately, you know, scream, oh my gosh, especially because there's money involved and they have a lot of money involved. You know, some of these people are investing in NFTs with their life savings, mm-hmm. right? So they're scared.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make a quick buck, but they're also scared. So they're going to do everything and scream FUD as soon as that shows potentially.
And it's also largely because for some people, their experience does not mirror that of their peers and the other people they're seeing make it big in the space. And it also maybe doesn't mirror the headlines they're seeing on the news, right? That mm-hmm. certainly does not help. You know, and another thing to note is that every financial move you make is on the blockchain, right? And it's public and it's being scrutinized by your holders and your followers, right? And if not handled well, you know, that can lead to, you know, a floor price dropping and ultimately a project failing. Yeah. So
although involving community in building a business is a really unique opportunity, to cash in on it properly, we need to stop treating our holders just as that initial cash source and start talking to them like they're a VC that owns equity in the company's success. You have to be ready to be out there and be honest. You know, integrity always wins in business. That's what Michael said before. And giving your supporters that chance to get to know you and feel involved not only helps your project on a micro level, but on a macro level. You know, since the community actually owns a part of your project and they want their asset to remain valuable, if you're putting in that transparency and work, they are going to be the biggest cheerleaders, the biggest evangelicals to their friends, family, and community at large. They will work for your project success because you are respecting the investment they gave you through treating them with respect and honesty.
Now that is a mic drop.
Thank you. Sometimes.
So the next section that we want to talk about is the fact that the roadmap is not a business plan.
Nope, definitely not.
Why?
So typically businesses or brands are not launched for the sake of just launching something, you know, art for art. There's, you know, typically there's some sort of informal or preferably a formal business plan that is in place. So a business plan includes information, including your unique value statement, you know, mission, vision, values, revenue streams, market segments, channels of distribution. And they may also include brand guidelines and financial projections, you know. Business plans are kind of like the map for the ship, and your team is the crew, you are the captain, and, you know, VCs are people you're picking up along the way to help guide you. And business plans help founders stay on track, you know, keep their teams on track, all to working towards a common goal while measuring key performance indicators of that success. You know, the plan can morph and change significantly over time. I'm not saying it's like dead set in the way, but this act of intention setting and the thought put into a plan gives a very clear guideline to everyone involved on how to work as a team. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. And that's different than Web3, because in Web3, we have this little thing called a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
And a roadmap is not a business plan. You know, and I think investors and holders are starting to catch on.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? That, you know, roadmaps are something someone dreams up and hopes to achieve, but there is never any real, you know, or oftentimes no tangible action, or kind of begins to fizzle out slowly. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes sense. NFTs were created by coders originally, right? Which borrowed this idea of a roadmap from technology. I'm going to read you the definition here, because the definition of a roadmap is a display document or diagram that illustrates a technology adoption plan at a given organization. So the technology roadmaps are created to help business leaders plan and strategize which, when, and why certain technologies will be onboarded, while avoiding expensive mistakes and even plan for technologies becoming obsolete. So, I mean, on paper, it sounds kind of like a business plan,
mm-hmm.
you know, and given that, like we said, Web3 was built by coders and technologists, a roadmap seems fitting at a base level to be used here within the space. However, a roadmap, you know, is micro-focused on adoption of technology into an organization. So, you know, something like that might be fairly fitting for, you know, existing brands looking to adopt NFTs to their, you know, company's offerings.
Mm-hmm.
But the flexibility of a roadmap is not great, right? There certainly is not enough evidence to say your project is worth investing in, you know, for all the reasons we sort of stated above. And so like you saw above, you know, the roadmap is oftentimes, you know, sleekly art directed and designed. It looks sexy. It's beautiful. There's a fancy road. There's all these icons, all these little stops, all these awesome elements. And you're being sold on the hype,
mm-hmm.
right? It's basically become a marketing tactic
yeah.
for many projects.
Kind of baseless.
Yeah. Like for many, it's just a checkbox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a checkbox they check off as part of their project checklist. And as a result, many founders, you know, copy or borrow concepts from one another, and they just see it as like, all right, there's a roadmap, check, there's something there, you know, and they don't really think about the implications of the things they are committing to or intending to, you know, follow through on.
Yeah, right? It sounds all too familiar.
It does.
Yeah.
You know what it does sound like? A political campaign, you know? A politician will technically, you know, and oftentimes overpromise, and then more often than not, underdeliver or never deliver.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not just about owning sick or meme-worthy art anymore. As more people get into NFTs with that Web 2 mentality of getting something for their purchase, people are going to want to know what they're buying is going to give them something in return. Like right now, they need that trust. They need that security of a long-term plan. With an uncalculated roadmap or a too flexible roadmap, you're setting yourself up for failing short of your, and falling short of your goals without having those measurable KPIs to be accountable to. You know, it's just ideas. When things go wrong or get hard, or you're, you know, you're more likely to get lazy, you know, change directions or just flat out give up.
Yeah. And I mean, this is also true for projects that had potential founders that seemed like they had every intention on following through and making the project a reality, you know, we see them losing steam because they lack that patience and staying power. And don't treat the project like a business, you know, and it's hard to blame them, especially when a lot of them have don't know what they've signed up for.
Yeah. So actually, to that point, I have a really great example to like to share. It's actually one of the first projects that I actually purchased. It's a project called Donut Shop.
Oh, Donut Shop.
And many a conversation in our house about Donut Shop. And so it was actually one of the first projects I backed. And they utilized the sale of the NFT as a Kickstarter to actually build a real life donut shop in Miami. You know, I liked it because of the utility, obviously, and it was very clearly, you know, to me, it was very clear that the quality of the art, the branding, the videos, the very active Discord, that it seemed like their founders really had, like, they had some cash already. And on first glance, like, everything kind of checked out. It looked pretty good. It looked really professional.
And it doesn't hurt that you're a baker too, right?
Yeah. So. No, obviously I liked it because it was a real bakery and I love the food scene in Miami. So it was like nice to see another artisanal donut shop coming through the works. That was a Web3 donut shop. So I got involved in the Discord. I joined some Twitter spaces and, as I heard the founders speak, I kind of got this sinking feeling that the founders were wildly unprepared for what was ahead. They sounded young, which is, there's nothing wrong with them sounding young, but, you know, and they've worked in e-commerce and tech, so they clearly had that background, but their tone of voice just seemed just a little bit too confident, just a little bit too focused on the NFT minting out. And it was focused on sick art versus actually running the business. None of them had worked in artisanal food before, you know, which is a little bit of a red flag for me. Since I you know, grilled them hard on a Twitter space. And unfortunately, they didn't really have clear answers for me.
I remember that. That was, it was a very savage evening.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, their answers were as vague as their well-intentioned roadmap. And, you know, Mint came, I had whitelisted, I said, you know what, okay, I'm just going to go along for the ride. I minted my donut. And during the mint and post-mint, there were several critical mistakes that, due to a lack of transparency, the floor dropped insanely. And despite all that, they still managed to walk away with 530 ETH as a team, which at the time was worth $1.9 million Canadian.
Now, you're a baker, so you can speak to this a little bit more than I can, but is $1.9 million not an insane amount of money for opening a small donut shop?
I opened my bakery on $3,000. You could do an insane amount of things with $1.9 million in food and still have some. So, yeah, you definitely don't need $1.9 million. So they eventually started to attempt on their roadmap, and they ran into a lot of unexpected issues, you know, which with more planning or having team members or, you know, guidance of people who've actually worked in artisanal food before in Miami, I feel like these issues could have been avoided, you know, with a business plan that was transparent on how they were going to use that money to execute. They could have had a better chance of just winning overall.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, they are trying their best. Don't get me wrong. I see the effort that's still there, but it goes to show that their original plan was not really well thought out. And the promise of that cash from the NFT was much more exciting and appealing. They made a lot of promises, and so far, none have come to full fruition yet.
Yeah, and you know, I've kind of followed along because when Kat jumped into this, I did pay attention to the Discord. And you know, I think after that mint, they were in for a really rude awakening when they realized that, you know, the sick 3D donut art did not really translate into running a successful bakery and pastry shop in the real world, right? You know, these guys didn't set the right pieces in place to succeed, you know, and they were launching a literal business. Like, it was literally a business.
Yeah, a real business.
A real brick and mortar
business.
That's
why I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if that group of founders didn't put the effort into building out a proper business plan and didn't really go through sort of the steps we kind of outlined throughout this podcast, then what are we to expect from the vast majority of projects that are not launching a physical, tangible product, but are in fact launching a digital asset, right?
I'm not surprised that the vast majority of project founders, you know, aren't thinking about it that
way.
Their
head's not in that space at all.
No, definitely not. There's still that disconnect, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and let's just say, like, to be clear, they didn't have bad intentions. I think they're attempting to follow through on their end of the bargain, but due to this lack of foresight and planning beyond just a roadmap, they're now struggling really hard. But, you know, in the end of the day, that's running a real business. It's a real painful, thankless grind.
Amen.
Yeah.
So take home points.
If we are trying to build a project that's going to last and drive real value for holders, like we all say, adopting a more structured business plan with measurable key performance indicators, you know, it could help. Maybe there's a Web3 way to do this that goes away from the traditional business plan. But we cannot discredit the value of the time taken to fully flesh out a plan and create a plan of action for a team to adhere to.
Now, I was going to say that typically business plans, you know, aren't public. You know, they're commonly made known only to the investors. But I mean, here's a question, right? In Web3, the community are the investors. So should business plans be made public to holders?
That's a good question. And I would say absolutely. Absolutely. If we're treating your holders like VCs, and you know, we're making a business plan, we should be sharing that with them so they can come along for the ride and build with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So last point that we'd love to touch on today is the unique value proposition. Okay. So a value proposition is a very clear statement that communicates to your customers the value that you bring to their lives with your product or service. So beyond just a statement or an elevator pitch, this is your long-term project mission, your visions, and your values. This should be communicated with every single move and touch point that your brand makes, okay, to allow for consistency and a really, really clear message to your target audience that this is what you're about.
And that's, you know, how it typically works in sort of the traditional or real world. But in Web3, you know, we've noticed something different, right? You don't really have that unique value proposition. You know, typically when a project succeeds and blows up, you know, they've done incredibly well, they've minted out, it's huge, it's by all means considered a success. You end up seeing dozens and dozens and dozens of derivatives try to replicate that project's success. And, you know, several of them actually do well. Mm-hmm. You know, all they do is they copy the art, they switch a few things around a little. You know, there's been a trend of putting the word not in front of whatever the project was and trying to do the opposite without doing the opposite. And you know, oftentimes these variations, they have zero value, right?
Zero.
And they just aim to pander to that wave of people who missed the first, you know, the first wave, they missed the boat the first time. And they try to replicate that initial success and make a quick buck. But, you know, that's part of the problem, right? It's just, it doesn't do anything to move the space forward.
Zero.
And so, you know, the problem is people don't want to adopt the mindset of a unique value proposition in the space. And, you know, it's largely because of fear and greed. Like, I don't blame them on one hand. Mm-hmm. People want to make money, right? And they want to do it by playing safe and doing what works, right? Unfortunately, where I think we are in the NFT space is the industry hasn't fully evolved to a point where we're really rewarding innovation and taking risks, right? It's still in its infancy stage. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are so early. So these mistakes are, you know, kind of acceptable, except for the fact that, you know, there's billions of dollars being rugged, but, you know.
Yeah, but I think in general, we aren't putting in the right incentives in place to reward people to try and fail.
Oh,
right?
No.
And, you know, there's a lot of other things that factor into that. But I think we're both of the same mindset, right? That we believe that the only way to move forward as a space is to slowly move away from what has worked and to tread into these uncharted waters, to take those risks, take those leaps. And I don't know, I'm hoping this kind of serves as a bit of a call to arms to maybe future founders to take risks, be more creative, you know, buck the current trend and meta and try something new. Like, I know it's tempting. I know it's tempting to do what works and try to make that quick buck. But I believe if you delay gratification, mm-hmm. you know, and build to provide real value, I mean, I truly believe that reward down the road
will pay off in spades and will far outweigh the immediate payout you may get right now following the crowd and following what works.
Yep. That is facts. Ladies and gentlemen, that's facts.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is almost it. I know that was a lot of content, and obviously we've contrasted a lot here.
Yeah. A lot of stuff to digest here.
A lot of information, but, you know, we're hoping that at least some of what we said makes sense and some of these take-home points, you know, inspire you to act within your current projects, within many projects that you might be, launching soon or anything you kind of embrace moving forward. And we hope that, you know, yeah, you do embrace some of the values and the mindset of running, you know, an NFT project like a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we do that, we can slowly start making a shift in the right direction out of the bear market, you know, and getting closer to mass adoption. You know, I think we should kind of move past replicating the same, you know, the same derivative shit, you know, and I think we need to be taken seriously as an industry, and we may as well start, you know, acting the way we want to be seen. So let's prioritize and reward innovation. I think it's the step forward.
Amen to that, Michael. Well, that brings us to the end of our third episode of Not a JPEG. Be sure to hit the subscribe button if you're watching us on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd really appreciate that. If you have social media, make sure you go and give us a follow at Not a JPEG Podcast. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is. As a reminder, we would like to hit 1,000 follows on Twitter. And at that point, we will try and host a live Twitter space where we invite anyone who's a listener to come in and pitch and share their ideas on how they might want to transition a business into Web3. And we'd love to kind of create a little think tank around that. So there's that. So, you know, tell your coworkers, tell the guy sitting in the cubicle next to you, tell your boss, you know, tell your co-founders that Not a JPEG is your new favorite podcast. Thanks so much.
We'll see you next time.